You're listening to KBOO Portland.
It's 8 a.m. on KBOO Portland. It's Friday morning. It's time to bridge that gap. Stay tuned to your community connection.
Good morning to Portland and the world. How are you? How are you feeling? To the galaxy, infinity, and beyond, as they say. I'm Cammie, and you're listening to The Gap, where we are minding and bridging. On the line with me is my better half, Althea Billing. How are you?
Hi. You know, I'm doing good. Every morning that we do this, sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't know, do I have the right energy? And then I hear that song, and I'm like, I do have the right energy. It's in me, and I can do it.
It resets. Yeah, definitely. And in the studio, we have Sonia. Sonia, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
A pleasure to be here with you, or, you know, afar, but always together in a way.
that's radio.
So,
it
that's
sure
radio,
is.
Yeah. Far and
don't even
and,
get me started on radio cool. waves.
That's a whole different show. So today we have a couple of things that we're going to be talking about. But before that, you know, I want to do a little check-in with you just to see what's up, because I know things have been not easy, almost, I'd say, difficult. And, you know, I've been feeling a little, you know, uneasy. Maybe that's just me projecting that onto you. But I just, you know, how are you feeling? What have you been doing to keep your spirits up, Althea?
What have I been doing? It's a good question. I've been trying to, like, get connected with friends that I haven't talked to in a while that would normally be in kind of, you know, the physical realm in terms of, like, we would go and see each other normally and obviously haven't been doing that because of quarantine. So that's been helping. And also, you know, giving myself practice in trying to, like, keep track of when bad things happen to me. This isn't like something that everybody does, I don't think, hopefully, but I have trouble kind of like threading the needle between individual bad things that have befallen me, or like to the extent that I like realize that I'm having a hard time. Like, it'll be like 2 weeks later, it's like, oh wait, like a whole bunch of bad, like I was having a really hard time and I just kind of like forgot or didn't pay attention to that or nurture or give myself space. I was like beating myself up about it. So I'm like trying to be more conscious about that.
Oh, I feel you on that. If I start getting, you know, feeling uneasy, I'm like, all right, did you eat? Did you drink? You know, what's going on with you? Did something happen? What is, you know, try to get to the bottom of it. Because there's a lot of things, even from just, you know, being on your news feed online, whatever, you can have your whole, you know, go through a whole roller coaster of emotions, and, you know, it ain't easy. Sonia, how about you? You have any tips for staying sane?
Tips? Well, I will sit quietly and watch my breath go in and out. I try reading. I've been trying audiobooks, and then I find I like start dozing off, and I wake up and the chapter I was listening to has been over for who knows how long, and I try to seek back. And so yesterday I listened to chapter 13 of The Chamber of Secrets, I think 5 times, cuz I kept dozing off. And this is in the middle of the afternoon. Or was it yesterday or the day before? See, that's another thing.
Is it a
thing.
Good chapter? I'm trying to think what happens in chapter 5.
Yeah, exactly. What does?
Oh, you couldn't tell me. You were sleeping. Okay, all right.
Well, see, now I'm like, now I'm on chapter 18 of The Prisoner of Azkaban. Yeah, so it's like, You know, I just kept going, I'm like binging the whole series because I got Stephen Fry reading them. And I've always loved Stephen Fry, and it's really interesting to hear how he does, how he reads Hagrid's dialogue and comparing it to how Robbie Coltrane essayed the character in the films, particularly because Fry and Coltrane have been friends for like 40 years.
That's pretty awesome. I like that audiobooks are a thing. I mean, you know, we've had books and tapes, you know, forever, but it's something, you know, just like you don't have to go to the library or anything. It's just right there in the palm of your hand. And to some of them, some of the audiobooks, I notice it's actual authors reading it. So it's like even a double whammy, because you have like this book that you like and your favorite author reading it to you. It's just quite a treat.
Yeah. In this case, it's kind of a thing to be reading them at all. So the fact that it's Stephen Fry doing it, and you know, trying to distance the art from the artist kind of thing in this particular case.
Right.
Interesting.
I have a few reasons to not care for
history on Twitter.
The author of that book, of those books.
Yeah.
Interesting. So overall, it sounds like meditating and reading. Those are, I guess that's what the kids are calling it these days.
Yeah, it's things you can do while sitting still.
What about you, Tammy?
I actually was... It's funnily enough, I was actually going to purchase my first audiobook on the interweb. And it was going to be free. And I said, no. And then I backed out for some reason. No, I don't trust it. So I might
actually
just
go. It was free?
I don't know. And I said, well, and then I started thinking, well, what's the difference between podcast and it's free? And I want to like support the person doing it. So it's like, cause it's like a, you know, one of these, like small press or like small, self-publishing people. So I figured, nah, let me, because it's, because I guess it was like a deal, like a special, you try Amazon Prime, and they let me try all these different things. I'm like, this is how they get me.
Mm-hmm.
So let me, you know, let me pause it now and just keep going. But my main
thing. Is that the one where you put your payment method down first?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it will be automatically charged. So convenient.
Yeah.
I did that once. So I'm like, where does this $100 go to? All right. I forgot to press stop.
Speaking of easy and convenient use of your payment method, folks can go to kboo.fm/give right now and set up a monthly donation of $5 or more with where they tell their bank to give KBOO a certain dollar amount each month on their behalf, and they can support this very media organ that serves them and only them and doesn't deliver them to advertisers.
Yes, that's true. The KBOO does not do that, and I really appreciate that. But thank you so much for that, Sona, because KBOO is in the midst of its drive right now. And for people who are interested in keeping this a volunteer powered community resource, you can log on to kboo.fm and go to the donate button right on top. And for every dollar you donate, it's going to be matched. Up to, what is it, Ophie? Was it $10,000?
$10,000, yeah. We had a very generous donor helping us out. And so to unlock that money, we need help from our listeners. And you can do that, like my wonderful co-panelist has said, at KBOO.
I'd like Better Half.
Better half
sounds good to me.
Better Half. Yeah, that's great. I was thinking of just like in like the internet age, like does the phrase like "don't look a gift horse in the mouth"? Like I don't even know that I've really fully engaged with that idea of like if you get something for free, you better take it and run, or you're gonna find out what the catch is. But you know that's not quite how it.
If you take it, you're consenting to the catch.
Right.
You see, and when
the catch is that will catch you.
Right. And here's the catch with. Yeah, the donation catches that. Oops, community radio continues with your help and participation.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the so-called
times, I think.
The so-called catch, which isn't even really a catch, is you're putting your money in something that gives you something. You know, it's a mutual exchange, and or also an investment in one's community. Mark Maron said that if you're not paying for the product, then in fact you are the product. You're the product is what it is. In commercial media, your attention is being sold to the advertiser.
That's true. And I mean, Attention Merchant is a book by Tim Wu, and they talk about it there, where basically people are capitalizing off of our attention and putting a lot of money into researching how to captivate our attention more and more and more and more and more, which, I mean, it's a slippery slope to brainwashing or just brain annihilating type of culture that would stem from that. And that's why we're going to talk about that some more, about the effects of community and what community looks like these days, and especially these days with all the things that are happening in Portland. I know that I've been 100% counting on the KBOO Evening News and other locally run institutions to pretty much give me updates, because you have all of these, Ophelia, like you were saying, the parachute reporters, and I'm sure that they're feeling that in Wisconsin now, all sorts of places where things are happening, and to be able to have a community resource that not only gives you facts, but also opens the door and allows you to be part of it. Because I started off KBOO in the newsroom, and I love that I was able to, see the people writing the news and also be part of the news and contribute in a way that, other people are going to listen and learn. And, I can go on and on, but the community resource, I think, is so important, especially in times like this, and the fact that it is you, the community, and not, people who are not familiar with what you want and what you need. And I think, even if you're from out of town, you're welcome too. This is community. This is volunteer powered KBOO. You go to KBOO.fm, go up to the donate button. And again, every dollar you donate, it's matched. And moving on to the show, speaking of if you're not buying something, you are the product. We do have a 2020 TikTok update. Hit it, Sonia.
This is TikTok Watch 2020 with the Gap hosts, Althea Billing and Tammy Upteas.
I do really like that theme. Again, puts you in the mood.
Althea Billings, will you give us our 2020 TikTok watch, old pun intended?
Yes, pun intended. So, fans of the show know we like to keep an eye on what's going on with TikTok. Earlier in August, President Trump issued an executive order that would mandate that TikTok sell its American assets. Because it is Chinese owned, and there has been varied complaints of if it's like a national security threat, and sort of like a varied understanding of if that's the case. And so the sale deadline is approaching quickly. I think, so they were saying before that it was September 15th, I think it's like the week of the 20th is when it has to happen. And so Microsoft is in talks, Walmart is in talks, and they'd probably be buying like a lot of the English-speaking assets for TikTok. So that would include like the U.S., Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. But a wrench has been thrown in the works. And obviously, like, this is a very, like, desirable product. TikTok is a very popular app. But the wrench thrown in the works has been that China has changed their export control policy to include certain artificial intelligence technology. And that would actually include, or likely include, TikTok's algorithm whereby it like selects what goes on your For You page. So if you haven't used TikTok, there's the main function of the app is this thing called the For You page, where you kind of like scroll through and it'll show you different stuff from people. There's like an incredible level of discoverability on TikTok. And so you'll see things from people all over the world, things you might never have engaged with before. And then it ends up sort of like curating that for you based on how you interact with those things, which is like what makes it valuable, right? Like even with the export control, like they could sell off the ad, like the user data and the name TikTok, but what the companies who are looking to invest in it really want is that cool algorithm that makes it like unique and what people are interested in right now. So basically now there's an added layer where Chinese approval is going to be needed for the sale. So that's the whole thing. And we'll see how it goes in like the next week or so is when that is going to play out. Also, the other big thing in the news about TikTok right now is that there's kids doing something called the Benadryl Challenge, which I don't feel like we really need to get into too deep, but suffice it to say, what are teens doing? Turns out they're taking too many Benadryl to try to hallucinate. And there was a kid in Oklahoma who died, a couple kids in Texas who were hospitalized. So, I mean, I don't want to dwell on it too much. Teens are always, always up to something, you know. And I'll just say, teens, if you're listening, don't do that.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it, man. When we were talking about it yesterday, you were saying how TikTok is a medium for a bigger issue. And, you know, when it comes to that, because remember there was a Tide Pod challenge on YouTube, on Instagram a couple of years ago where you know, mostly teenagers and young folks were eating Tide Pods, which is laundry detergent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there have been a couple of, I remember OG planking, if you remember planking, which was funny. But
planking?
Then, where you just lay down on a wood plank, which is funny. But then people started being more and more risky and, you know, just like places that they could be, you know, middle of the street or something where you could get run over. That seems a little dangerous.
I remember there was a story of, this was probably back in like 2008 or something, of like, a woman who was trying to win a radio contest and like drank 6 bottles of water in a row and like wasn't allowed to pee and she died. Like people are always, I mean, you won't find that on this radio station, but, and also good God, but I don't know. I think that there's some effort to try to kick up that the Benadryl challenge is bad, which it is, should mean that TikTok is bad. And I think it's important to kind of think back to, hey, why does the president want to ban TikTok anyway? Oh, it's because that's where young people are finding political power and information about how they can undermine his creep towards fascism, either by overbooking tickets for the Tulsa rally or by doing shopping cart abandonment on his website, which we've also talked about at different points in this program.
I mean, and also don't forget, Claudia Conway.
Claudia Conway.
Yeah, who's now petitioning for, I know so much about this person's life just because they've advertised so much of it on Twitter, on TikTok. She was saying that, I mean, it's so nuts to see, like, I always want to call her Kanye. I have such a hard time with her name. Oh my gosh, what's your mother's name? Kellyanne Conway. I'll call her Kelly for me then. Kelly, we're confused with Kelly Kirk. Kellyanne Conway. She is leaving the White House, and her husband is also leaving the Lincoln Project, which is a Republican-led, quote-unquote, anti-Trump nonprofit organization. And their daughter, who is very active on TikTok, is petitioning to, divorce, quote-unquote, divorce your parents.
Emancipation. She wants to emancipate herself.
She's filing for emancipation.
Turned 16. And her parents basically really, quit their jobs to try to keep her back in. And there's a lot of, like, allegations
and she's very
of abuse
active
and stuff. Yeah.
On TikTok and very, you know, she speaks about, you know, Black Lives Matter, and she's very much the opposite of what we see or have heard from her mother. So I thought that was also interesting. And then, like you mentioned, kicking up the whole Benadryl thing, where the Benadryl challenge is, where it's like, are you reporting about this because you actually care? Or is it like part of the whole TikTok is horrible for your teenagers, you know, scare? So what happens?
I think it just kind of goes to, like, hey, keep an eye on what your kids are doing on the internet. Like, mm-hmm. they deserve some level of privacy, but yeah, I don't know that it's TikTok's fault. Is it not also the culture's fault for, like, glamorizing things that would make you momentarily famous?
Well, that also speaks a little bit about our upcoming subject that we're going to talk about in a couple of moments. I like how you segued that.
Thank you. It was unintentional.
Unintentional, yeah. We're going to open up the phone lines in just a hot moment. But in the meantime, we do have a little, you know, preamble for you. Just in case you are not familiar, this is The Gap. I'm Tammy. On the line with me is Althea. And in the studio is Sonia. We'll be back in just a moment. I hope you enjoy the song.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you, so let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please won't you be my neighbor?
You are listening to The Gap. I'm Althea. Tammy's on the line. We just heard "Won't You Be My Neighbor?" Is that the theme from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
I cried when I played when I was downloading it this morning, and I had to listen to the rest of it, and I was crying. I just made me think of simpler times. And yes, I will be your neighbor, and I want everyone to be my neighbor, and I love everyone. Just in tears, like a little baby.
Yeah. Well, it kind of segues into what we're going to talk about next, neighbors included. Thinking about community and social capital, and that there is like a prominent like sociologist, political scientist named Robert Putnam, who wrote this book called Bowling Alone, which I think I might have offhandedly mentioned on the show before. But basically, it talks about how over the past, like probably since like the 50s, there has been an erosion of social capital and community and a sense of social responsibility to others in terms of like thinking about the prevalence of civic organizations or church attendance or, you know, what
community
kind
radio.
Of group, community radio, what kind of groups are you connected to in your community? That there is a generational difference, generation to generation, those things have become untethered to a certain extent. And Tammy and I have been thinking about this in the context of the pandemic, especially thinking about like the social responsibility aspect of what am I doing for other people? How am I connected to my community? And we have a clip here from an interview that Robert Putnam did, the guy who wrote this book. So Bowling Alone, when he references it, basically means like the erosion of social capital. But thinking about how the thinking around what goes on in your community has changed over time and how that really might be a bad thing.
Is the core, I think that's the core of the American dream. I really do, that everybody here ought to get a fair chance to start in life. And we were never perfect on that, but I think what the evidence says is we're getting worse fast on that. And I think and thought that that ought to be of concern to everybody, not just progressives. Everybody ought to worry if that fundamental core idea that just because you're a kid in America, you ought to get a fair start.
And but your concern is not simply that the relative, I mean, obviously, I suppose the kid of two college-educated professionals is going to have a start higher on the ladder than the kid who doesn't have those advantages. But one wouldn't be so worried about that, perhaps, as long as the kid lower on the ladder still had a good shot to make it up. But I think your argument is not just the gap, but that actually, absolutely, even the kid lower on the ladder
that's right.
is on now these facing obstacles he didn't 30, 50 years ago. Is that right?
That's right. And it's not just there's a gap, but the gap is growing.
Right.
And that's why the whole book is encompassed in that. Things getting better and better for kids from educated homes, kids getting worse, things getting worse for kids coming from less well-educated homes. And the kids had nothing to do with it. It's not their fault.
Right.
People joke, the most important thing now is choosing your parents. Well, that's just wrong. I mean, I can joke about it, but at some deep level, that just feels to me deeply wrong. And to go back to the link of the decline in the community,
right.
There are many reasons for the growing gap between rich kids and poor kids, many. But the core underlying reason, in my view, is captured in the title of the book. That's why it's called Our Kids. Because when I was growing up in the 50s, in a different world, and when my parents talked about doing things for our kids, we've got to invest some money so that our kids can have a swimming pool. They did not mean building a swimming pool in our backyard for my sister and me. They meant let's pay higher taxes so that all the kids in town have a swimming pool at high school. That the term our kids meant all the kids in town. And the proof of it was they kept doing those things when my sister and I were long gone. So they were doing it for the other kids in town. But as a result of the Bowling Alone phenomenon, over the last 30 or 40 years, the meaning of our kids, the meaning of what our obligations are to one another has shriveled. And it's become now focused, when people talk about our kids now, they mean their own biological kids. And if you go back to my hometown and talk about poor kids there now, they say about the poor kids, well, they're not my kids. They're somebody else's kids. Let them worry about them. And that, you see how that sense that other people's kids don't really belong to me? I mean, of course we pay attention to our own kids. I do and you do, and I'm not trying to say that that's wrong. On the contrary, I'm trying to say we ought to have some regard, as Americans historically have had, for all the kids in town.
So, yeah, that was Robert Putnam talking about the cultural shift in the past 50 years or so in American society, where there is a declining sense of community, of social responsibility to others in a group, and the erosion of social capital. And we were, Tammy and I were talking about bringing this topic up on the show, and I realized that recently I had like an experience that kind of relates to it. Like randomly my car battery died while I was at home, so I wasn't in any kind of danger, but I was very much confronted by the fact of who am I going to call. I don't live super close to the city. Some of the friends that I might call first were out of town. Another one of my friends had like some kind of electric vehicle that would be no use to me anyway. I called my cousins. I hadn't talked to them in a while, but they tried to help me anyway. It didn't work out. I thought about, am I going to call my landlord? Am I going to try to tap into my like work network at KBOO? But very low on the list was my desire to talk to my neighbors about it, even though we like park right next to each other. And feeling like you know, my neighbors, I've never talked to them, really. I guess I've lived here not terribly long, but I haven't really talked to my neighbors. I know they have a dog. I've, like, seen them before and, like, waved or whatever, but the idea of asking them for something when I feel like I've never given them anything, I don't feel like I've been especially neighborly. It felt really, really confronting to go and ask them for help with something that, you know, arguably doesn't really put them out at all.
Well, what you'd be giving them is the opportunity to be neighborly to you.
See, and then you yourself said, remember when we kept talking, you said, but if it was reversed, you would be so into the idea of helping someone out, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'd be all over it if they needed me.
Right. I mean, I remember we had a dog just came into the front yard. I live in a house with just way too many people in it. But this dog just came in the front yard, and we were like, oh, well, you know, let's get the dog here. And we were hanging out with the dog, and we realized that, you know, the neighbors were looking for it. And I was thinking, like, these poor neighbors, like, they could have just knocked on the door or something, but, you know, instead they were just, like, on the street, like, very apprehensive and worried, and I wish that we could have just, like, you know, but then we did get to meet them, and we did get to talk, and it was this relationship forged, you know, and it makes me wonder, like, you know, going on what you said, you know, who do you call when you need sometimes to, like, just talk about things, you know, just to, like, about, you know, who do you call when you need actual help? Like, different networks give you different things, and that's part of being in a community and, like you said, like the quote-unquote social capital. Not the biggest fan of that phrase, but just the idea of, like, you bring something into a circle because you simply as a human being are, you know? So you bring your energies, you bring your vibes, you bring your abilities, you bring your set skills into, you know, the circle, and that circle feeds that, you know, it's like a symbiotic relationship. And the one thing in that audio, he said obligation to one another. That really stuck with me. And it really, our obligation to one another. And it, I wonder, like, hearing that, just that piece of, you know, little bit of a sentence, and then in the juxtaposition of, like, seeing, like, what you see on the news, you know, of, like, people just murdering, and it's just like, what happened? And I guess I personally can blame, you know, this is just my point of view. I can blame any politician I want. I can blame any piece of technology I want. I can blame any algorithm, and I can blame the food that I eat, and I can blame anything and everyone. But at the end of the day, I wonder, like, what is my obligation to my neighbor? Because why not, you know? And I don't want to, like, ever assume anything about my neighbor just because of the way that they look. And just as much as I don't want anyone assuming anything about me just because of the way that they look. But it seems as though there's just, I don't know, just, like you said, just almost like an anxiety, or honestly just being scared of your neighbor. And it just has gone so far from what Robert Putnam was talking about, the obligation to one another versus, like, you know, just being scared of one another.
This reminds me of something.
And that's just my personal opinion.
This reminds me of something, a little revelation I had a while ago. I don't know if it at the time was centered around coming out, but I have linked it subsequently to that. It was one of the things that made coming out so difficult. I realized I didn't trust the people in my orbit to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so what made coming out so such a wrenching experience was having to admit that, you know, like, I haven't told you about this before because I didn't trust you. You know, I didn't actually say that. It was more like that's what I was saying to myself. But what was I getting at? Oh, you say how stoked you would be for the opportunity to help someone who needs it, and yet you hesitate to ask for help. And I saw that in myself a while along, you know, a couple years ago, and I started to see it from the other direction. Like, what am I saying about those people? that I won't ask them for help? Why am I making some assumptions about their readiness, their willingness to help mm-hmm. someone who needs it?
Oh, yeah, that's another layer, yeah. Or is it just a reflection of self? Is it like, you know, it can really just go so many places. That is so interesting. You know, I a while ago, I was in high school. I was real, you know, going through my emo phase. And someone once said to me, you know, before you just call yourself, like, depressed or think that you're sad, like, make sure that you aren't just hanging around people that are just making you feel bad. And it clicked. And I realized, wait, this isn't, you know, I'd rather not have, you know, any type of community than have a community that's doing this. And even in the misfit community, you can say, you know, that's a sense of community in itself. And being part of, like, KBU, for example, I found such a sense of community of people that are, like, just so different but so much the same, you know, like, people that I would never talk to, and yet they've taught me how to do some of the things that I absolutely love and cherish the most. And all that it took is that connection, being like, hey, meet this person, and they're going to help you learn. Like, I learned from, you know, people that I would never, you know, people that are, you know, elders and that I would just never have this, you know, connection with, that now I have a deep, that I can trust, you know, with things that are beyond just community, that are, like, with the livelihood of myself. And that type of community is like, I, you know, like, for example, and, you know, when the corona happened, when the virus first, you know, started manifesting itself in the city, I was worried about these people that I met, that I, you know, at KBU, for example. I'm like, you know, there's some that are older, and I'm like, all right, well, if you need groceries, like, I'm here, just so you know, we already talk enough as it is, like, I'm up the street. And I realized, like, I would have never even thought about that if I didn't have the consciousness to think of someone else. And that comes from just meeting other people in your community, you know, and the neighbors. And I realized that, I don't know if you ever gave the phone number. It's this is a call-in radio show. And if you want to contribute to what we're talking about, you can call at 503-231-8187. Again, 503-231-8187. We're talking about Robert Putnam, political science writer of Bowling Alone, and also most recently Our Kids, and obligation to one another, being a neighbor, and what that means now. I guess, Sophia, you have any thought what this might look like post-corona, or how this might get translated with, like, all these, the protests that we're seeing and all of that?
Yeah. One thing that I was thinking about in terms of, like, kind of explaining my hesitation, which, I mean, I think some of it's social anxiety, but another one is to think about this other aspect, right, that is, like, what have I paid into my community? What, and, like, my desire to, like, oh, well, like, I don't know that I want to ask you for this thing unless I've done something for you first. And that, you know, in that context in my head, like, being an okay neighbor and just, like, not bothering you didn't quite feel like enough. And so thinking about, like, what does it mean to pay into the community that I, like, in and around the apartment building that I live in, like, my work community, in my friends, in, like, you know, activities that I'm involved in. And that that part of what Putnam is saying is that a lot of those sort of, like, civic organizations, like your Rotary clubs, or even reference to the title of the book, like your bowling, like, league, those things were more like a more natural part of our, like, everyday life. Like, that would be something that you would definitely make time for. And I think, I don't know, being driven into the individual and feeling like, you know, X, Y, or Z, you do have to go it alone, whether it's the pandemic or whatever, I think is something that I'm, like, interested in exploring what that means for me and, like, how I can create more community, but also looking at and recognizing the ways in which, like, what are my blocks to getting connected with people? And some of it is, like, you know, there are a lot of big, scary things happening in the world right now. And I know that I sometimes have a hesitation to engage with someone because I don't want on really different pages about it.
Well, that's like a whole subject of its own of, like, you know, just bringing up the climate right now, especially in Portland, man, you know, like your politics, it's held so close to you that it becomes part of you. And I'm not saying identity politics, I'm not saying that, but it becomes so close to you that if someone opposes it or has a different idea or different notion or just a different slightly nuance, it's like they're just against you. And why would you want to have dialogue with someone who you think is just against you? And like, you know, wearing like a mega hat or like, yeah, it gives me like a bit of an anxiety, sure. But I'm not going to not talk to them, you know? Like, I'm not going to not talk to them. Like if they're wearing, you know, like a hood, you know what I'm saying? When I see a hood, like a, you know, clan hood, I'd probably run, you know, like, you know, like that's not, you know, but I think that to take things to such an extreme is a disservice to you and to your neighbor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I see like a Trump-Pence thing, you know, up the street, like, I'm like, oh, okay, this person is just exercising what they want. The same as I see if someone have like a Mingus Maps flyer, I'm like, they're exercising what they want. And it's actually cool because it's local exercise. I agree. So I appreciate that even more. But
yeah, I would say that the political has like a direct line into like the old part of your brain, you know, like the fight or flight, like, oh God, I'm really in danger. And in my experience, a lot of times it, like, even if we're talking about an issue that isn't like, you know, doesn't have a direct like material impact on me, a young woman who lives in Portland, like that maybe it's talking about like building a pipeline somewhere. If someone for that, in my mind, I have the capacity to sort of like snowball that particular political position into, okay, well then like, what do you think about like land rights and human rights? And what do you think about like women and having their own rights and like the capitalism and the economy? And like all of these things suddenly are now like a direct like threat to me. And it makes it like that my immediate thing, I get into the fight or flight, it's like, I'm either going to cry because I'm feeling threatened, or I'm going to like walk away from this conversation and like leave it at that point, even though, you know, I may not know exactly what their political opinion is based on. I don't know where they get, what kind of information they have access to or what they've been working with. And so one thing that I have tried to do is kind of like apply some of the stuff that I learned in like therapy for anxiety, which is like, you know, when you're in that part of your brain that's like, oh God, run, or oh God, punch something, like you shouldn't discount when you really are in danger. Like, if I stumble into a bunch of neo-Nazis, holy crap, I need to run. But that same level of like adrenaline, high intensity, can come in when you're not actually in danger and you're having a conversation with someone who has a different perspective than you. And it's also like, I feel like the minutiae of the different perspectives has now gotten like the small differences have become really, really big. Like even people who I think we mostly politically agree on things that are important, it feels scary to deal with what are the little bits that we disagree with. And so one thing that I'm trying to do is to like try to recognize when I get like activated like that and think about, am I really in danger? Is this person saying something that directly threatens me? They are, great, I'm gone. But if it's not, if we're talking about a political issue, maybe I can stay in the conversation for another beat and see if there is something that I can contribute to this.
Sometimes my mom says outrageous stuff. I mean, things I'm like, just outrageous stuff. And I used to kind of be like, what are you talking about? Like, this is,
But now I'm like, where did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Just, I want to know, where did you hear that? And then, you know, and then it turns out she heard it on conspiracy theory, Illuminati's 666 or something. I'm like, all right, Mom, let me explain to you why anyone can put anything on YouTube. So here are the actual, like, more credible news outlets that you should probably look into. And then it helps her because it calms her. And then I didn't, like, belittle my mother, you know, and, like, you know, and it brings a place to talk, because no one wants to talk to you when you're yelling at them. Like, when you call someone a snowflake, they're shut down. When you call someone any type of negative, you call someone a fascist for having it, you know, I think that word has been so loosely, it's almost losing its meaning at this point. And
yeah,
it's very dangerous when it just, things lose their meaning and their potency. And then we say things like, I mean, dead bodies in the streets of Portland are not okay. It's not okay in any form. It's just not okay. And to reduce someone to, like, it just, at what point is human life just the same, just at the same token where it's just not, it's lost its meaning? Like, it's just, I don't know, where's that obligation to one another, you know? And we saw so much of that in the beginning of the coronavirus, where people were like, check on your neighbor, you know, all, and it just, now it's just changed so drastically.
Yeah. And I think part of it is this, like, shift in mentality. Maybe it's a shift in mentality, or it's just like, hey, check yourself. Like, when you get into a political conversation, when you're thinking about political things, are you thinking about winning, or are you thinking about, like, making things better? Because I've definitely, like, had conversations with people where it's like, actually, you're really wrong, and I, like, need to win this conversation in order for it to feel good to me, like that is the goal of, like, a political conversation. Like, I've had that before,
but yeah, I think when we go conversations with person and having and understanding something new, and then, and it's not even about swaying someone, it's just like, it's just a dialogue, and yeah, you know, and then a part of me, you know, even says, like, even just saying that, you know, part of me, like, polices myself in the sense of, like, well, you know, some people have the power to, like, actually make change after dialogue and input policies and actually create these things. And for some people, it's not just dialogue. Yeah, but for the most of us, it is. And for the most of us, I think that we are just simply just not being kind to one another anymore. And
yeah,
we're not Nancy Pelosi. We aren't Speaker of the House, and we can't make these ideas that we have come into fruition unless we actually do, like, grassroots. But in the meanwhile, while we're all over here, you know, shooting each other, you know, the actual people that are putting policy and stuff are getting their hair did. So just
in yeah,
Hunger Games, and I really hope that the odds are with us.
Yeah.
May they be in our favor.
Well, one thing I wanted to point out that you and I were discussing before when thinking about how people have reacted to the person that was, like, killed during that Trump rally in Portland was, like, celebrating it, which is, like, pretty upsetting from, like, a humanity level. But also that, like, it's not impossible to have, like, two sort of different things be true at the same time. Like, you can hold different things in both hands, which is, this is a person whose politics I disagree with, who I think has actively, who has, like, created harm in our political community. If this person's ends were, like, met, that would be terrible. And it's also sad that they died in it, like, they shouldn't have. But both of those things can be true at the same time. And it feels, even now, like, I feel like, ooh, like, should I really say that? Like, that I'm not trying, like, that's not me being an apologist. That's not me excusing any of it. But that those two things are actually not in direct contradiction with each other.
And then what happened, you know, we read just yesterday, last night, the suspect that the suspect in the shooting was killed during the arrest.
So there we go. Like, this is just unbelievable. There are good things happening. Putnam wrote this book so long ago.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He wrote it before the internet was a thing. And he's like, hey, guys, social capital is degrading and we're not, like, our community organizations are waning. Do you feel like we should be worried about that? And we're like, what about online community? What about chat rooms?
What about chat?
Which isn't to say that community created online isn't, like, valuable and valid, because it is, but it has a different impact on the brain.
Yes, in the book, they also mentioned that because he actually had to take a beat from doing writing. He wrote the book, and then he took it off the shelves because he was like, oh, actually, let me rethink this whole internet thing and if it's here to stay. And then he's like, oh, this actually strained my suspicions about what's going to happen. So, yep, and that's where we are. I'm going to say it again, obligation to one another. That's going to stick with me. I guess going back to your story about your neighbors, do you have a relationship with them? Like, have you forged a relationship?
Yeah, I know their names now. They were helpful. They were like, oh, yeah, we'd be glad to help you out. We actually have, like, they had some little gadget that could charge my car battery, like, independent of having cable. And they had to charge it, so it took, like, two. They're like, is it okay? Like, we can call over our other neighbor. I was like, no, it's okay. I'll wait. And they charged my car. Turns out I had accidentally knocked on my brights last time I got out of the car. So that's why it happened. And it was, like, good to get that like, recognition of them and to have the experience of, like, working through all of those, like, at the time, very overwhelming emotions of, oh, God, like, I have this problem. There are people that could help me, but I don't want to ask them because I feel like I ought to owe them something in return.
Well, like Mr. Rogers said, won't you be my neighbor? Oh, that song.
If anyone wants to call in with, like, ideas about how to be neighborly, like, I would be very interested. The number, we got just a few minutes left, but 503-231-8187 is the number if you've got neighborly advice. I feel like it's like a casserole.
Well, it's Corona times, you can't do casserole. I feel like
that's right. I can't give anybody a baked good. Man, that sucks. Or like shoveling somebody's driveway. That's a neighborly thing. Again, this
that
is me talking.
Cool.
This is me talking about pop culture, though.
Oh, just you've seen this in movies. You've never actually done that.
I have not personally done it. I think when I was a kid, my dad did it for our, like, elderly neighbor back home, which was nice of him. Huh. Good job, Dad. But also, you know, I'm from the Pacific Northwest. We don't get a lot of snow anyway.
Interesting. I wonder what I would like to start doing something like that. I guess. Is things like keeping your lawn mowed, like, a neighborly thing to do, I wonder? Apparently my neighbors think so. Ew.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, the aspect of it that's, like keeping the neighborhood nice. I know in Seattle, which is where I grew up, like, at the end of every August, like, the whole city would have, like, block parties where, like, you go out and you, like, socialize with your neighbors and have, like, a little potluck. Those were always fun. Because then at least you, like, have the contact information of the different people on your street and, like, know one fact about them. Like, back at where my mom lives at, like, there's a neighbor who makes really good pies. And there was one year where I, like, missed the pie and I was devastated because when else am I going to have the opportunity to have this neighbor who lives down the street who we don't know that well, like, she makes incredible pie.
Aww.
Yeah, the dog got to it before me. Isn't that devastating?
Well, Annalisa has a tip for neighborliness.
Oh, please, thank you.
Go ahead, Annalisa, you're on.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I have very good neighbors. We all stick together. Then in the spring, my cherry tree was full of big cherries, and my ladder wasn't tall enough, and it would be a little dangerous for me maybe to climb on it. My neighbor has an orchard ladder, and so there they came with the orchard ladder picking cherries for both them and myself. The same with my plums. They came with the orchard ladder, and anything that I need, I can ask for. And I share my blueberries and my plums and my other fruit with them, and that's how it goes. Very nice.
Wow. That's
lots
awesome.
Of children. Lots of children. So it's very nice to observe them playing now in the street together with masks on. And, yeah, so it's all good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I love your show.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That means a lot to us. Now we're neighbors.
Yeah.
Radio neighbors.
That's so lovely. I think, Sonia, is there another caller?
Yes. I'm going to see. Yes, hold on.
No problem.
All right, we can vamp for a sec.
I like.
All right, I think it's Reef or Reese.
The bounty of a garden. That's great.
Oh.
Welcome, Reese.
Hey, you guys. What were your names again?
I'm Sonia. That's Althea, and that's Tammy.
Tammy, yeah.
Oh, okay. Great show. I think you guys are really touching on some emotional triggers this morning. It's almost cathartic in a way, like the philosophical approach to these types of situations and dealing with others.
Yeah, totally. I'm glad you got something out of
Reese.
It.
Thank you, Reese. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, not to take too much time, but I'm thinking, you know, I work in the trades, and so when I just bought a house, and when you move in and you can get to know your neighbors, is like, it's almost trivial in a way. It's kind of like... it's perfunctory, you know, and you can also forge relationships though too, and help each other with house, you know, rebuilding things in the house, or, you know, with projects and stuff. And that really creates community. And then also, I hadn't mentioned community gardening. I mean, that thing is pretty cool.
That's true. And that's all very like pragmatic stuff too. We appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I'll try and find you guys on the podcast or something.
Oh, appreciate you. We are on every Friday at 8 a.m. Here on KBOO, your community local community connection. And Reese, I appreciate that call, and I hope that you know, the new home you moved into, you know, he's in good health and enjoy and all the positive vibes and all that for you. Congratulations.
Oh, that means a lot. Really appreciate it. You guys have a great weekend.
No problem.
Yeah, you too.
Oh, all right, all this positivity. I really appreciate it. I'm gonna figure out something neighborly to do, and I'm gonna do it for my neighbors.
Yeah. I dig that. I'm gonna brainstorm. Maybe we'll come back at you next week with some ideas. We are running up on the hour here. You've been listening to The Gap. I'm Althea, my better half, Tammy. Thank you, Sonia, in the studio. We've been talking about community, social capital, talking to people about tough topics. And one last reminder before we go, if you are interested in supporting KBOO community, I'm underlining that with my voice radio, you can go to kboo.fm and click on that good old donate button and help support your community connection.
See ya.
Bye. Girls, we run this-